Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Informal Paranormal. This is Michael Jones, and I'm with John Rossi. And how's it going tonight, John?
Oh, I am just loving my computer at the moment. I'm having all kinds of problems here. So if you could kind of wing it for a minute or two, we'll see if I can get into the chat room and everything, okay?
Yeah. I hope everybody had a good weekend this weekend. Everything was pretty nice here. We had a little bit of rainstorms and stuff. Tonight we're going to be talking about apophenia after we review a couple of remote viewing coordinates. And I believe my friend John here actually got to go to Jordan Springs and enjoy himself over the weekend. I heard it was a good turnout and everything. What did you say? It was like 50 or something so people?
Yeah, we had 55 guests, and the event went really well. We were using we were doing a new format. In the past, what we had done was taking the people into, you know, like let's say if there's 50, you know, we'd have taken them into groups of 12 or 13, and one investigator would have taken them throughout the various locations in the building. Well, this time what we did was we had the investigators stay at each location, and the groups moved from location to location. That way they were able to interact with a different investigator at each location, and each location had a different type of equipment that was being used.
Oh, that's cool. So it was, in other words, you didn't have to keep setting up and moving.
Absolutely not. We had some of our equipment. That wasn't possible. We were doing some ITC experiments, and the 30-year-old tube television that we were using would have probably broke a couple of people's backs if we were trying to haul that from floor to floor.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, what were you guys doing, ITC research or something?
We were. We wanted to show people about video ITC. So we actually had, down in the pub area of Jordan Springs, we had a monitor set up with a camera and a recording onto a laptop. And basically the investigator explained, you know, the basic premises in terms of video ITC work, and you know, basically was doing some essentially like EVP sessions and was doing 3-minute blocks of recording.
Well, that's cool. Is that just to keep him from actually experiencing apophenia from staring at the screen?
That and the fact that basically to effectively review that type of evidence, you're not viewing it in a video format. You need to view it frame by frame. So he's recording at 30 frames per second, and if he's doing 3-minute blocks, he has a lot of information to review. It just made it more manageable. And the other thing is, like you were saying, the random images that are flashing on the screen and stuff like that, over a period of time, I think it kind of wigged you out, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I don't know how many people have actually woke up in the middle of the night. Or I actually remember when we didn't have cable TV and the stations went off the air, you'd wake up in the middle of the night staring at the ant races on your TV. I remember that very well. So you did EVP. You actually had your full spectrum gear running too, didn't you?
We did. We were on the third floor. we actually were using our full spectrum camera. And in one location on the third floor, we were using IR illuminators. And in another location, we were using UV lamps.
Okay.
And basically, when you're viewing that through the viewfinder, it creates a very different effect in terms of what you're looking at.
Oh, nice. Well, I mean, like on the UV side of it, is it more like everything's highlighted than being lit up by the infrared?
It looks like your basic, it almost looks like looking at a camera through night vision, but there's a certain color to it.
Yeah.
And the contrast is somewhat different.
Oh, okay. That's
so.
Pretty cool. Well, did you ever get your computer acting any better?
I'm working on it. I'm just having a lot of fun here. The other thing that was interesting about Jordan Springs this weekend is normally we have a lot of repeat people, but we actually had 54 new guests, and they'd all actually heard about it in the basically the email campaign that went on for about 2 weeks before the event. So we were pretty pleased with the level of response, particularly since historically August with vacations and everything tends to be a month where a lot of times our guest count is rather low. And the owners were actually very pleased with how many people had showed up and, in fact, wanted to add another event to this year's calendar. They want to do one in
Christmas.
Christmas, that's right.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, they came up with the idea, Ghosts of the Christmas Past, and I'm a little bit less than thrilled about that as a concept. But I got to tell you, Jordan Springs at Christmas time is an insane place just in terms of how it's decorated and stuff. If you can imagine, like, the North Pole exploding and all Santa's paraphernalia is just, like, everywhere.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. And we've done investigations during the holidays before, and, you know, sometimes the level of activity actually kicks up some. So evidently some of the spirits get into the Christmas spirit.
Very good. Very good. Do you want to go ahead and go on to the remote viewing stuff, and we'll move back into Apophenia here in a minute?
Well, I would like to, but I'm still trying to get into the Blog Talks. All right, well, I'll tell you what. Let me go ahead, and we'll start talking about that, and I'll go ahead and, yeah, it looks like I'm in Paranexus, so I can post the stuff up.
Okay, good.
So,
all right. I've already got my remote viewing sessions posted, and I'm going to go ahead and give everybody in the chat room the link. All you have to do is go to this link, and it'll be the first entry on the thread. The target's 444-7896 that we'll be discussing. Not sure what this is. It was interesting. I when I was doing this, it seemed familiar, and
okay, tonight, Mike, I really want you to go with your feelings, okay?
Go with my feelings.
Just in terms of, like, you know, what you just said there, it seems familiar and really, you know, talk up, you know, basically all your impressions and stuff that you've got associated with this.
I feel like it was almost like somebody was either washing animals, felt like a farm or some environment like that. Maybe, I'm not sure. Seemed like people might have been working, but they were having fun kind of deal.
Okay.
And maybe that it was a little, you know, it had a historical content to it. So.
Okay. Anything else about it? In fact, let me just pull this up so I want to take a quick look at it myself.
I don't know if everybody in the chat room, if you'll go to the link I've just posted in chat, and I'll post it again real quick. And it's the first thread, or excuse me, the first entry on the thread. And targets 444-4-7896. And you can just click on the little picture, and it'll enlarge for you. But that's what I came up with. And I'm also, the one thing I kept from the last time that I've done these sessions is this: at the what speed I'm doing these at. I'm not just totally taking my time with it. I'm actually keeping a quicker pace so the analytical side of my brain's not kicking in as easily. So.
Okay. All right, I just realized something since I just put in a new browser.
Yeah,
I'm not in on actually logged into ParaNexus at the moment. So hold on a second, okay?
All right, it is coming up quicker for you, right?
Yeah, but unfortunately, none of my stuff is
over there. Correct. Well,
yeah.
For anybody out there that you're having problems with Internet Explorer 8, if I had any advice, go with Firefox or Google Chrome. Yeah, especially with Blog Talk Radio, Google Chrome seems to do pretty well. So, it was interesting. And I didn't feel distracted with these two sessions. It almost felt like an everyday kind of thing. So that's what I was wanting to get to that level of feeling like before I moved on. So now I'm fixing to start the next part of the course, where we're actually taking the training wheels off and see what I can come up with.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and post 444 in there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just hold on one second.
So you like Christmas time over there, huh?
Listen, last year, just because, I don't know, I was trying to amuse myself or something, I started counting Christmas trees. I gave up at 87.
Oh my God! How big is Jordan Springs?
Well, the main building's 48,000 square feet, and I'm telling you what—if you've been in a Christmas store before, you know how jam packed it is with stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan Springs is like that as well, and their displays and stuff are just over the top.
Oh wow!
The reason they do that, though, it's actually pretty cool. They offer tours to the public, and then all the money goes to local charities.
Oh, that's great. Collect.
Yeah. And they spend months setting this thing up and doing it. So, it's a lot of effort on their part.
But they're helping the community. There's a lot of places that don't do that, and that's really good to hear.
Yeah, they do a lot of charity work there. Okay, Mike. Why don't you take a look and see if this place, anything about this photo.
Huh, that's Dasso Falcon. I know, that's where I work at.
So what were you saying about smelly animals?
Well, there's people in there that would actually fit that. And I did draw the hanger. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And it is historical. Dasso Falcon's been around since towards the end of World War I, and they developed all the, of course, fighter aircraft for France for a lot of years and went commercial later on in the 50s and 60s. And then I've been working for the company now going on. This is the third year, and I'm loving it. But, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's one of our hangars, as a matter of fact. That's not the same facility as mine, but I knew the aircraft the moment I saw them.
Yeah, it took me a while to track that photo down off the internet. But here's my question for you. I obviously picked that for a reason, and I was trying to see whether or not things that you may have had some either prior contact with or some ongoing familiarity,
mm-hmm.
whether or not your remote viewing would even be more, stronger. But I don't think it's working like that.
No, it does. I don't think it does either. I do find it interesting, though, that I picked up on the large and all this other stuff and the building actual hangar shape. and things like that. So
yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I don't know where I got the bristly from. That's interesting. Well, where that came from?
I don't know. Okay, so do you want to talk about your other?
Yeah, just a second. Let me pull it up and I'll look at it. On the second entry down, I'm not going to say that this is on or off or what it is, but it felt like I was literally, it wasn't a residence so much, but it's bigger than a residence. And it felt like it was a building with a pathway and a car outside. Well, you know, that's just how it felt. I'm not going to say that's what it is. Ralph Hand, there's people. It felt populated. And there again, like I said, I wasn't feeling distracted with it.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have that one posted yet.
I can post in just a second. So what were some of your other feelings associated with this one?
I'm not going to say it was crowded. Seemed like there was people moving back and forth. It seemed like whatever, if it's a building or whatever container, there's a lot of holes in it, like windows or maybe holes, I don't know, portholes. You know, it just, it felt, again, it felt familiar, like something I've understood or knew.
Okay.
I'm not going to say that that this was an investigation location, but that's kind of the way it struck me.
Huh. You want to elaborate on that, or is that just a general thought that you...
The gut feeling I had that this was a location that somebody performed an investigation and there were ghosts. That's how it felt. And, I, you know, that's something I just wasn't going to voice, but now that you've asked, I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Okay. Well, I can't tell you for sure.
Yeah?
But I'd be absolutely shocked if it isn't.
Really?
Yeah. So... Okay, I've just put it up there.
All right, if everybody will refresh your screen, and it's a second post down. What is this? That's a monument.
It is a monument. So when you were viewing this, did you, like, get hungry or anything?
No, I didn't feel hungry.
No, you didn't feel like maybe this is kind of like a restaurant or anything like that?
No, I didn't get that. Is it, I got a question. Is it three levels?
The monument?
No, maybe the monument's three levels tall, but I mean the restaurant itself.
Well, it's not a restaurant. I was just trying to see if you were asking if you had any, other associations with,
Something I did not do with this site template. I did not write down all the associations that go along with it. Just a second. Let me grab that. That was bad of me. Well, as far as the building structure, I was getting old, tall, rough, hard, old, interesting, and bricked.
Okay.
Okay. With the, what I think was a vehicle out there, was blue, enclosed, warm, tan, silver, rectangular, hard, man-made. I came up with car for some reason. I don't know why.
Okay.
Then, as far as that pathway is concerned, I came up with hard patterned red, brown, and gray, narrow, level, course is nice, and I said rock path. I don't know if there's a rock path going up to that monument.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there is. Right now it's covered in snow.
That's
so
interesting. Well, so you're telling me outside this monument there's a restaurant?
No, well, no. More kind of like a historic picnic.
Oh, okay. Okay. Huh. Was this actually a battleground scene or something?
No, this is actually out in California, in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Okay.
In fact, you know what? I think there was a party there.
Huh. Well, I got the people milling...
Yeah, let me think. What was the name of that, the people throwing the party? I think it was Donner.
Oh, really? The Donner Party?
Yeah, that's the monument to them. So my guess is, you know, I'm sure that that site's been investigated by teams over the years. I mean, how could it not be?
Okay. Okay.
But I'm not positive. I've never read anywhere that anyone's done it. But to me, it'd be like such a natural location if you're out there in California, you know, that you would go there or not. So, again, you know, I picked a site, you know, that had, you know, obviously a lot of emotional content to it. And did that – was this any different than any of the others?
It was just – like I said, it just felt like it was a haunted location. That was okay. The emotion I was getting off of, or a place that people would go to investigate something like that. But how many people were in the Donner Party, by the way?
You know, actually, I don't know that. I mean, it was a whole wagon train.
Okay.
And quite a few of them actually got stuck there. And some at one point left and brought back a rescue party. You know, a lot of people did survive. But the ones that died ended up getting eaten. They didn't kill people and eat them, but they did eat the dead. So, like, when you were viewing this, you didn't, like, get a craving for ladies' fingers or...
No, I didn't have that issue.
Okay, just checking. You know, I just was wondering if there would be something to that.
No, I didn't get that impression. You know, maybe that's something I need to start also writing down as my general impressions on top of the actual remote viewing session.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, your impressions that, you know, you thought that there'd been investigations there. It's like I said, you know, I don't know for sure, but I mean, how could there not be?
Well, this is very true.
You know.
Very
All
true.
Right. Right. So, what are you going to be doing next week? Do you know what the next part of your course is going to be pushing you towards? Or
yeah, taking the training wheels away completely. I'll be just having a blank piece of paper and going at it. There's not going to be any forms involved or anything like that. So just be literally be giving a target, and you literally start jotting down information and coming to conclusions. So,
huh?
Maybe that'll help.
Wow, that sounds like that'll be interesting. I mean, you've already done that before informally here on the show a couple times.
Yeah, with people in the chat room where I just do blank readings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I seem to have a higher percent on that, actually. But, you know, I've only done that, what, 3 or 4 times? So, yeah.
Now, you might have been highly motivated for that one.
Oh, that's true. That's very true.
Okay. I'm still trying to get into the chat room, so I'm thinking at this point my machine's possessed and it's just not going to happen. So I may just have to not be in the chat tonight. Okay. I wanted to talk tonight a little bit about instrumental transcommunication. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And two of the areas that... I think are critical when you're doing that kind of work are the topics of apophenia and pareidolia. Apophenia is finding significance in insignificant phenomena. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you go back to, if everyone goes back to the Paranexus page that we were just looking at with the remote viewing things.
Okay. I've got the link posted back in the chat room.
Okay. I posted two examples of it, of apophenia. The first one is a classic that line drawing that pretty much anyone that's taken psychology classes in college or psychology classes anywhere for that matter has probably seen this drawing. Okay. Do you know what it is?
Well, it's actually two different things as far as I can
okay.
see.
All right. You could say what you think it is.
Well, one way is an old lady. The other way is a pretty woman, and it looks like she's got her head turned, and you see her cheek.
Okay.
So
when you look at it, can you see both at the same time?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
But see, I've done artwork for over 20 years too, though.
Okay.
You know, so I'm used to looking at the line work, so that's probably the reason I can do that.
Do the people in the chat room, are they seeing the old lady or the young woman?
I don't know. If anybody wants to chime in the chat room, tell us what you're seeing. That'd be appreciated.
Yeah, I guess.
I hadn't had anybody respond, really.
All right. The other one is, that's the famous Mars rock photo. Are you seeing what appears to be like half of a statue head?
Right. You see the face on Mars. And
yeah, the Mars face.
Right.
So this is probably generated thousands of postings on the internet, and all kinds of conspiracy theories come from this photo here, because people see that, and what they think they're seeing, or what they believe they're seeing, is a statue head, which would prove that there has been either life on Mars or there is life in the universe other than ours, intelligent life.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know, Mr. Hoagland, when that all occurred, the interesting thing of it is there are pyramid-type mountains which don't normally naturally occur, and that was kind of interesting that he found that in the geography. But the face thing, I've actually seen a telemetry from their satellites, where they're actually taking ground radar image
right.
to get the topography. And the face is not there. It's just that's just the way the shadows play off that mountain range.
Right. At that particular time of day when that was taken, that's what the appearance is. But here's the thing that we as researchers have to be careful of. We get a couple of data points, and then we lose our minds. And what I mean by that is this is an interesting photo, but it's incomplete. There's not enough information to go where so many people went with it.
Oh, absolutely. They just come unglued. Well, I think part of the reason they came unglued over this is everybody's wanting proof of something outside of humanity. During that time period, that's when this hit.
It's not even, I think, limited to that time period. I think that if this photo just came out tomorrow for the very first time, it would be the exact same kind of feeding frenzy of people making all kinds of assumptions about it that simply aren't backed up by the evidence. And that's the thing that, as researchers and investigators, we have to be very cautious when we get information. And we can't just take it to a place where we'd like it to be. We have to take it to a place that's based on the factual information. Because it's like, look at all the people that went out there and had all these elaborate theories, probably wrote some books and everything. And then, they got different types of, photos of the same area, and it turns out it was absolutely nothing. It was a shadow on a rock formation.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same situation. Hey, you're talking about the data points. Same situation happened in the ghost investigation community when we started having digital cameras with the flashes really close to the lens assembly, and all these orb photos started showing up. Well,
don't be saying that word on the radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. These balls of energy that supposedly were in front of you. But what I'm getting at is instead of people checking other data sources for the same, like trying to take multiple pieces of equipment and trying to capture the same event to verify that's what they were getting on film, They just jumped to conclusion that they were actually orbs instead of dust particles or whatever, or, you know, whatever kind of infield contamination you're looking at. And, you know, that's not to say that there's not balls of energy people have captured on film, because that would be, you know, totally wrong of me to say that, because I do believe that's possible. But as far as it being spiritual orbs, that's taking a big jump off a bridge. You know, that's your reputation. Yeah. You're taking into your own hands when you do that. So, but
you know, so I guess where I'm saying, you know, what I wanted to talk about with this is with when you're doing video ITC work, that you have to be very careful when you're doing analysis of the evidence that you're collecting. Today I took some time and I went to some of the sites on the internet that, you know, deal with, you know, instrumental transcommunication. And I actually, you know, I went to the very first one when you do a Google search and, that comes up. And I was absolutely amazed at what they were posting for evidence.
Really?
I mean,
what's an example? Like,
well, I mean, some of their stuff was, it was like when you're laying on your back looking at the clouds and saying, oh, look, there's an elephant. Oh, look, there's a ship going by. It was stuff like, it was actually stuff remarkably similar to the rock face there.
Really?
Or the non-rock face, yeah. And then what was interesting is they were doing research and they were trying to contact various historical people and stuff. And they had a number of photos of supposedly Rasputin, you know, the mad monk from Russia that, you know,
right.
Okay. And they had these photo captures from the ITC that they were doing that was supposedly Rasputin. And I'm looking at it, it's like, really? Really? You know, it had the general shape of a person. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly, you know, I don't know.
How can you identify who it is, right? Even if it is a person.
You know, it would have been enough of a stretch to say, wow, we've got an outline of a person here, or we've got a silhouette of a person, or some of it even had what appeared to be more detail on some of the other photos. But the reality was, it was still totally up to interpretation. And, you know, I'm fairly open-minded to everything, but I also proceed somewhat cautiously in terms of what does it all mean. And, you know, in looking at this video ITC work that's being done, the likelihood that you're just seeing something because you're hoping that something there is incredibly high. So for me and for my team, while we're doing this research, unless we get an accompanying EVP with it, we're not putting a lot of weight to it.
Right.
Because we're thinking that if you have two types of phenomena occurring at the same time, what's the chance that, you know, you're just looking at random, you know, just a video mishmash that happens to resemble something. But if something appears to come forward, it looks like, you know, a human silhouette or something, and it says, you know, hey, turn the channel or something like that, then, hey, well, you know, maybe that's something you want to be paying attention to. Because the images that I was seeing that was posted all over the internet as proof of spirit content was just, you know, it didn't hold water.
Right. They're making extreme assumptions is what you're saying. And as a researcher, that's not healthy.
Well, you know, it's like I don't want to be busting on them, and people are already probably Googling and going to that site and stuff. But the reality is, you know, if you're going to go out there and say these things and then you're a number one on the Google hit parade, then, you know, your evidence better be able to handle a level of scrutiny, you know, and my agenda wasn't to go and be busting on these people. You know, I was, you know, genuinely curious because we're doing that research now and they've made a bunch of statements and already, just looking at what they're saying things are, it's just not adding up for me.
Well, you know, that's I don't know how you feel about photos, but like you said, unless you have another data set coming in at the same time as the photo, they really are just photos. And there's no proof as really what you're looking at, unless it's just an extremely, you know, like say you had an apparition or let's say a mist or whatever that looks like a human form. And, and unless it has the details, and I don't mean the apophenia end of it, I mean you can actually see, like for instance, the photo you captured of the soldier, you know, that one that you posted, I believe, a while back.
Right.
That actually, you could see the uniform and the hat and the whole nine. I mean, it was what it was. But it's there again, it's just a photo. There was actually no contact in it, right?
No, and I didn't see it at the time. It wasn't something that I was aware of. I was sensing things, you know, around us, but I wasn't, you know, when I took that photo, that was just one of, you know, hundreds of photos that I was shooting during the night.
Right. But that's one of those situations where it's not apophenia lending itself to you making the assumption that you're looking at a human apparition. You know, that was clear what you could see, you know. So, you know, I've seen other photos that it's just mist, even though it takes a general shape of a person, and people are swearing up and down it's a person.
Right.
And, you know, that's where I think, you know, and it takes a critical eye. It really does when you're dealing with this stuff. But you really have to be careful as a researcher not letting your mind perceive something wrong before you start making claims on the Internet. Or for that matter, just to the research societies in general. You know, you're out there trying to gather evidence that this stuff's really happening, and, you know, you're actually hurting the community when you don't use a real critical eye in reviewing your evidence. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one thing to present things as like, you know, I took this photo or I did this type of experiment under this set of circumstances, and this is the result that I got. And let other people look at it and kind of determine what it means for them. But, you know, to take it to places like on this one website that I was talking about, I don't remember which king that they said, but they've got this one photo, and they're saying it's like Henry IV,
right.
King Henry IV. Dude, I don't even see anything that resembles a person in the photo, let alone King Henry IV. You know what I mean? I literally don't even see something that resembles a silhouette. All I just see is a huge blob of random stuff on the screen. And, you know, it's just like, I don't know, you know? To me, it confuses me. Hey, Dominica asked us to take a look at some photos. She posted on that are on her website, and mm-hmm. She posted it in the chat room. Why don't you go ahead and click on that?
Okay, just a second. Let me go take a peek. Now, there's something interesting I was noticing in the chat conversation. Let's see. Is it at the bottom of the page, correct?
Yeah, at the bottom of the page.
Well, and here's something a lot of people don't realize. Humidity, okay? And even when it's snowing outside, you have humidity. Humidity is not necessarily visible by the human eye, and when the flash goes off, you'll capture it. And a lot of times that's what happens. Yep, that's why the third picture I'm seeing reflections in a window.
Yeah, ask Dominica, whether, was she shooting that through a glass window or a car?
Not sure.
I can't type into the chat room. I can't get in.
Well, she says that it was, I believe, let me look here, says nephew was taking the pictures with a cheap throwaway camera. So the flash is going to be close to the actual lens assembly itself.
Right. I don't know. That doesn't strike me as a flashed photo, though.
Right.
And you know what it does remind me of? It reminds me of that photo that I asked you and Doug and a few others to review that was supposedly the apparition of the Southern soldier that was by the schoolyard here in Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys all did the analysis, and when you took it on to the various photo programs, you were able to tell that it was a reflection based on the pixelization and the...
That's correct, and the way it was offset from the actual scene itself. There's all kinds of different aspects to it. You know, you're looking at also, there's a general lighting in a scene, and the reason you can tell things are reflection, if you look at the scene itself, there's a tonal contrast of all your different colors in the picture, and let's say the apparition's, like in this third photo, is out by the tree. Regardless that you're seeing it out there, you're still going to have the same general lighting affecting it. Okay?
Right.
So the tonal contrast is going to be the same. Whereas if it's a reflection, the tonal contrast is from the lighting source that's creating the reflection, which is totally different from the other environment. And that's how you can tell when you get a reflection.
Well, I just want to tell you what I ended up doing based on the information that I got from you and Doug and I think Brian was the other one that reviewed it. I was experimenting because you're saying, okay, it's a reflection off the glass.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that this quote-unquote the ghost would have to be in the car with the person who took the photo off of their cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So then I took my SUV, which actually has a black interior, which I thought would work well with this, and I started positioning it toward, you know, where the sun was coming in the side, the front, or the rear, until I created a situation where it seemed to have the same level of reflective light as the photo.
Yes.
And then I actually took a, like, 3.5-inch tall figurine. It's Sigmund Freud, but he kind of looks like a Southern soldier. He's wearing a gray overcoat type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck it on the seat next to me, and guess what?
It popped right up for you, didn't it?
There was a ghost in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And what I need is I need to have someone take a photo next to me so I can actually totally I've recreated it. I just don't have a photo because I need one more person to actually shoot the shot. But it's dead on. It's exactly like – and like this Sigmund was just literally sitting on the black seat. And, you know, the school buses here – or have a very dark charcoal gray vinyl seats.
Right.
So it created that same mirroring type phenomena. And I'm sure that this kid, he's a middle schooler, had some toy soldier.
Right.
And it was on the seat next to him, and it reflected up in the glass. And one of his friends was taking a kind of a goofy photo of his face, and next to his face, what appeared to be out in the yard, was a Southern soldier.
Yep. Now, this is the same technique. I don't know if anybody remembers the old monster movies from the 50s and 60s. Ray Harryhausen became famous by using the same exact technique. And what it is you take a black box and you put whatever creature you want in the film itself in the black box, like a spider or whatever, and you light blast it. Well, the inside of the light the box itself is a flat black. Okay? Well, they'll position a camera to where they can see the glass, and what they end up doing is they'll capture the reflection of that creature in the glass and have it overlaid on top of the film while the film's being projected and re-recorded. That's what you end up with, is a giant creature in the actual footage. And it's exact same process, and magicians use that process on stage. It's actually a very common special effect out there. So.
You want to comment on the other photos? I mean, the one with the snow, I mean, that's basically snow. I'm assuming what...
Now, the one with the mist, the very first one I'm looking at with the mist,
now,
to me, that's a humidity shot.
I'm going to tell you one thing. It's a cool photo.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a cool photo. But that is something that we could easily recreate.
Yeah.
And what happens is, can you ask Dominica if, was there any type of breeze that night that she was aware of?
Well, no, that's the problem. Her nephew's the one that took the pictures.
Okay.
So that's she didn't actually take the pictures herself, and her nephew is the one that took the pictures and captured this stuff. But like I said, you know, even, and like you said, if it was a breeze, even, you know, you're going to see stuff like that happening when somebody breathes out. You won't see your own breath, but the flash will capture the reflection and the humidity itself.
And, you know, here's the thing that, you know, if you can take a photo and recreate the exact effect, that doesn't mean that the original photo was fraudulent or even that it's not capturing something paranormal. But the thing is if you can come up with an alternate explanation that's non-paranormal, then if you're going to be responsible, that's where you need to go.
Right. And I would say this camera's flash is on the left-hand side, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, based on the two night shots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you'll capture orbs. Whichever side the flash is usually the side you're going to capture orbs on. Usually. But, you know, just like these reflections in the window, it's the same thing again. I mean, that's my opinion. That's just my opinion from studying different photographs over the past years, and that's just what it looks like. You know, that's not saying that they didn't capture something. But.
Right. I mean, the other thing, unless we could take this photo and put it on, you know, Photoshop or Photoshop Elements or one of them to look at it closely, but I absolutely agree. I think that you're getting interior car reflection
right
on that. Okay, the other area that you got to be careful on is the pareidolia, and that's the false interpretation of random sounds. Now, I enjoy using on investigations and stuff a Radio Shack hack or a Frank's box or whatever you want to call them, ghost box. But it's a piece of equipment that you better be very careful about what you say is evidence of the paranormal. Because, first of all, you know, it's essentially random sounds. And because it's going so quickly, it's clipping a lot of words. Okay, like, you know, you're going from radio station to radio station to radio station. And depending on your hack, not all of them are flipping at the same rate.
Right.
So there can be huge differences. You can take four Radio Shack hacks, and I can just about guarantee you that they'll actually be scanning at different rates because it's, you know, they're not worried about being that precise with it.
Right.
So if you have one that's running faster and running to the point where it's actually clipping the words, it's going so fast that by the time it changes stations, there's not even enough time for a single word to get out, then it's creating essentially noise. And you see, you know, your mind, the human mind wants to make sense of what it sees and it wants to make sense of what it hears. So it's kind of like if you think about it as either an audio or visual dot to dot. There's this, you know, remember dot to dots as a kid?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there'd be certain elements of the picture that they'd kind of get you started with. But then you had to, like, fill in all the lines and flesh it out. Well, when your mind hears a certain sound, it wants to make sense of it. You know, believe it or not, your mind really wants order.
Okay.
Even yours, Mike. It really wants to be ordered. So keep that in mind. Anyway, since it wants order, it's going to create order. And so what it's going to do is it's going to, like, fill in the blanks in order to create this noise that makes sense to it. All right?
Okay.
So what ends up happening is you take noise, and because your mind is insisting on having order and wants to hear words that it can understand, it starts filling in all these little blanks, and it starts creating speech.
Huh.
And you can see where that's a slippery slope, right?
Oh, yeah,
you can see where quickly. That can get you. Yeah.
So that would actually account for a lot of these people when they're coming across their own. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different EVPs that they say it's saying something, but when I listen to it, and I'll tell you the quickest way you can find out if you're experiencing pareidolia. Doug actually came across this. This is a very interesting thing you can do. You listen to it the first time, and you listen to what you think you hear, right? If you make your mind up that it's saying something different from what you just heard, and you listen to it again, and then you hear the different thing that you think it said, as in you can change the referencing in your mind's, you know, what you're thinking you're hearing, and it changes every time you listen to it again, that'd be pareidolia. You know, that's one way to identify it. A lot of times, you know, on these EVPs, and some of the stuff you've captured is pretty good, you know, you get into this, they're just so clean. You can hear, I mean, there's no denying what you're hearing.
Oh, absolutely. And EVPs is a whole nother area that, you know, in terms of where you need to be careful in terms of interpreting the sound. And one of the biggest things that I think that a lot of investigators do there is they start taking these sound programs and they start doing various filters, and they start – essentially what they start doing is they start creating new sounds, and they start, like, slowing things down, speeding things up. And the next thing you know, essentially what they're doing is creating speech.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, I'll hear EVPs on various websites, and you can just tell by the level of distortion and stuff that thing had been worked so many different ways with different filters and changing the speed and all that, that it's no longer reliable what you're hearing. Getting back to the Frank's box, though, one of the things that we do is we want to hear a response literally within seconds of a question, and that response we want to have a phrase or a sentence, because the reality that you could actually, you know, get like four or five words together from radio stations that are, you know, continually, you know, switching over, that actually made sense and was responsive to your question, the odds of that happening randomly is probably the same type of odds as everyone that's listening to the show tonight goes out tomorrow, buys a lottery ticket, and we all win big bucks.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? If you think about it in those terms. On the other hand, you know, people get all excited about these single word responses. Well, unless you're tracking how many questions you're doing over a period of time, every once in a while, there's going to be the appearance that you might catch a word that appears to be in a response to that question.
Right. Well, and that's a percentage chance of that happening too. That's why it's important. I think phrasing, when you get these three word phrases or even a full sentence, which I think is a very rare thing, you know, it's in context with what the question was. That is substantial. That goes beyond it just being a random occurrence. But with these single word responses, it may just, you don't know what it is. You know, you're still getting to the point where it's curious. Now, didn't you say you had an investigation once where you were using a Frank's box type device and you got blue, gray? You were in a Confederate battlefield.
Okay, actually, I was with another investigator, and he had an ovilus, which is, you know, it's another variant. You know, it basically, supposedly, the way it works is it interprets the environment, and it has like a 400-word vocabulary, and based on various environmental factors, it brings out words and stuff. Well, a number of people use these things. I've been around them, and to me, most of the time, it's just random, unconnected. It has no meaning. But we were down in Fredericksburg walking on the Sunken Road, which is the site of probably one of the most horrendous hand-to-hand battles of the Civil War. I mean, they ran out of bullets, and they beat each other with their rifles till their rifles fell apart, and then they picked the stone wall apart and were beating each other to death with rocks. I mean, it went to that level, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it is an active place. It's a powerful place. So anyway, we're walking down there, right?
Yeah.
Now, for the last hour, the obelisk has said nothing, okay? We get to this place. We're walking down the path, and all of a sudden it says blue, gray, Yankees, bastards. Well, first of all, all four of those words in that context make sense. We're at a battle location, you know, a horrendous battle location. And I went online and looked. What was interesting is bastard is not one of the words in the vocabulary of a novelist.
No, it's not. I was going to make that point. And the same thing with Frank's Box. If you're picking up radio transmissions, you will not hear curse words across the radio broadcast. So, you know, that's another way you can kind of tell whether or not you're picking something up.
Well, I can't tell you how many times I've been told to F myself on the Frank's Box during investigating at a location.
Oh, wow.
Quite a few times, actually. And that's exactly right. A lot of times you'll hear stuff that's just, all kinds of just vulgar language and stuff like that. You know, just like one word or two words. And the thing about that, I think, is significant, as you pointed out, is you can't say that on the radio.
Yeah.
And if you're spinning out on, like, the AM frequency, you know that those kind of words aren't on AM.
Well, no, you're not going to catch that on anything unless it's satellite radio, because you'll lose your license.
Right.
So, you know, that's significant. But, I mean, you know, that I had a lot of mixed feelings about the obelisk as being used as like a Frank's Box. And the reason I had problems with it is it's just all it is, it literally, is a software program that randomly goes through words, a word list. And the fact that you're picking up words that are not in the glossary of the obelisk is pretty amazing.
Well, you know, the thought is that spirits can affect electronics. Now, if you accept that premise, then, you know, perhaps it's able to manipulate that the way supposedly it's able to manipulate a radio, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, listen, before it gets – we run totally out of time because we're getting down to about the last 3 minutes or so of the show. I just wanted to mention that this Thursday night, Doug and Grant are going to be interviewing Mr. Nick Redfern, and the topic is going to be cryptozoology research.
Man, that ought to be pretty cool. I never have really had a big chance to go out and try that. I heard Nick's pretty experienced guy. That ought to be a really, really good show. Is he a Bigfoot researcher, or do you know, Ralph Hand?
Actually, I don't know, but maybe Doug might know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something. I don't follow that end of it. You know, most of the stuff I do are either alien-related, UFO-related, or ghost-related. So, but I think that's an excellent show for everybody to tune into if you're really interested in that kind of stuff.
Montauk Monster. Okay.
Oh, the Montauk Monster. I know what you're talking about. I remember when those photos hit the internet, and it's interesting.
Yeah, you know, I'm fascinated by cryptozoology, but I've got two knees that are blowing out. My doctor says I got great knees for an 80-year-old, but that's about 30 years older than I am. So hiking through the woods where some of those guys go to, you know, collect evidence and stuff, those days are long gone.
Yep. Yeah, he does. Somebody in the chat room did say he does do Bigfoot research. So yeah, that ought to be a pretty neat show, man. That's. And then on top of it, is there any other things coming up that you know of, Ralph Hand?
No, not. We're working on a few things for our show, but I don't have anything confirmed at this point. So.
Well, when's the didn't Doug and Grant say they had something going on down in Florida here in, I think, October or September?
Yeah. I don't have the dates. It's in September. They're going to be investigating at a courthouse there, and it's going to be open to the public. It's open to a certain amount of investigators.
Oh, cool.
Listen, Mike, we've just about run out of time. So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight and all of you in the chat room, and hopefully next week I'll be able to get in there. So you all have a good night.
All right, everybody, have a good night and enjoy your week. Take care.